I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Happy Mama Movement podcast. I'm Amy Taylor Cabaz, mama, journalist, coach, and founder of Mama Rising. This podcast is a space of community and collaboration. We gather stories of matrescence, motherhood, womanhood, and change told by our Mama Rising coaches and mothers around the globe, in the knowing that through our stories, we can begin to heal and change the way the world sees, values, and supports mothers everywhere. So, welcome to the Happy Mama Movement. And welcome to our special partner series. I have been exploring, researching, and coaching mothers around motherhood for more than a decade. And during that time, so often get asked, what about the partner? Is there something called patrescence? Do they go through similar identity shifts? What do dads feel as they become fathers? And how can we understand that experience better? And that is what this special series is dedicated to. I searched for three experts to explore different aspects of partnering as you become a partner and a parent. And this is what I am so excited to share with you today. In this first episode of this special series, you will hear from Stephen Kennedy, a father and founder of Birthing Dads Australia. In this interview, he explores his own experience of becoming a father, how he now supports other dads, and what we all need to keep in mind as our partners become fathers, and how we can understand their experience better. Stephen, it is a great honor to be stepping into this space and talking to you about this important insight and understanding into the experience of becoming a father. So thank you for saying yes and stepping into this with me.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
So let's start with how you came to be so passionate about supporting the experience of becoming fathers differently. How did this begin for you?
It began for me in 2017 when my son was born via emergency cesarean. It was born with an APGAR of 1. So we needed resuscitation, and I experienced pretty like post-traumatic stress from that, and depression, a bit of anxiety. And I'd never actually had any trouble with mental health. So it was the first time in my life that I was actually struggling. And I just started researching the topic of men at birth with academic research. And I started reading books around childbirth. And I realized that there was a big gap in our childbirth culture around the engagement of men and the involvement of men. You know, men have been in the room for 50 years. This, you know, early 70s was when men started coming into to support birth. Mm-hmm. But in that time, there really hasn't been a concerted effort or coordinated kind of drive to give them an idea about what it's like. And so I researching further and understanding the dynamics of birth, the physiology of birth, and just understanding men's role in that a little bit more, I just started thinking, well, someone's got to actually start teaching men what's going on for them and what they're going to experience, because there is actually a few things that we could just tell men about to make it a lot easier for the whole family, you know. And I just, So I started something called the Prepare Foundation, which is a registered charity in Australia. and a social enterprise called Birthing Dads, which has programs, and we teach men about childbirth support, pregnancy support, early fatherhood as well. So that's basically how I come to work in this area.
Wow. I really want to hear more about the cultural and societal change that we've been through in the last 50 years, and yet how little we've prepared men to be in that room. But if I could pause, if it's okay, to talk a little bit more about that experience. I know for myself and the thousands of women I've spoken to over the years, the reason why we're here having this conversation is because not only is it an incredibly traumatizing experience to go through what you did, but then to look around and realize there's no place for me to talk about it. There's nobody acknowledging this. I think that's a huge ongoing impact that we need to understand. And I would imagine for dads who do have these really overwhelming feelings in these moments or these different experiences, to feel like they can't then go and speak about it. I mean, we're not doing great for women either, but we do have mothers' groups. We do have spaces that we then gather and try and talk about it. But I can't imagine what it would be like to not even be allowed to speak out loud about what you've been through.
Look, if you break it down, it's kind of, I look at it as a bit of a fundamental hypocrisy in our societal attitudes towards men in general. So in general, we want men to be heart connected. We want them to be, you know, be able to share their emotional landscape and be soft, but also be hard when we want them to be, you know, those kind of the mixed messages around that. But when it comes to childbirth, we do really want them to be sensitive kind of guys that can step into that space of normal physiological birth and support that, in a sense, which is a loving environment. They have to provide that loving environment. And as you say, if there's any traumatic experience or there's any something happens where he feels that his partner or the baby is in danger, then he's meant to just suck it up. So there lies in this, like I say, fundamental hypocrisy with the way that we want our men to be, and then we haven't got any supports for them there to, you know, to pick up the pieces. You know, when my son was born, I actually asked the midwife that was nearby, like 2 days later, I said to her, can I talk to a social worker? Because I'm feeling like this is going to have some ongoing, and I wanted to just process it with my wife. And the midwife said, oh, well, you'll have to say it's for your partner. And look, I understand that that's the way our system is set up. We can't have, men are not a patient. They're not a visitor. They're in this, they're not staff in a hospital when childbirth is occurring. They're in this kind of other space. And I think we do need to set up supports for men around this time. Yeah.
And so what do you hear from others about that experience now that you are in this space? How does it feel to be that emotional support in that room on that day and yet not have a space to process what you've been through? I ask because, like we talked about before we hit record, I'm thinking, I hope not, I hope lots of dads and partners listen to this, but the reality is 99.99% of my audience are birthing mums. And the intention behind this series is to get a different perspective and see how our partners might feel. And maybe they pass on the podcast to their partner. But mostly I wonder what could we understand about that experience?
I think one of my own podcast guests said it best when he said, the transition to fatherhood for the first time is a bit like learning to surf. There's a hell of a lot of paddling and not many waves. So in that first year, we're really just not preparing men for the transition to fatherhood. I mean, we understand that the birth is always going to be something that men, well, not always, that's part of my work, is trying to change this dynamic. But like the childbirth part of the transition to fatherhood, it is something that we do need to teach men more about. But I think it's the part after that actually needs a little bit more attention as well, because men come into this kind of thinking, well, the first year is going to be blissful. It's going to be wonderful. And no one tells them about matrescence. No one tells them about postnatal depletion. No one tells them about the relationship dynamics are going to change. No one tells them about identity shift. And so on the other side, when they think they're going to be the happiest, they're actually feeling abandoned. A lot. That's what I hear from guys. They feel abandoned because their partner has changed in front of them, and rightly so. Let's make the point. She's gone from me to we, and she's focused on the survival of the baby, and she feels entirely responsible for that. Mm. Even although he might be a totally doting husband and really good, she's still got that primal responsibility. Now, he doesn't know about that. He actually thinks that everything is just going to go back to normal. You know, the question of when does intimacy return, and this 6-week mark, which is just every time I hear that, I'm like, yeah, if everything is going in the right direction, it's going to be maybe 6 weeks, but that's if you're lucky kind of thing. And men just don't get that, and we don't tell them that if there's been any trauma or any emotional upset around the birth, that this 6 weeks could be a lot longer. And we need to start teaching men a little bit about what it's like after birth, because men tend to blame the individual. They blame the individual woman for abandoning them, and the infant doesn't really need them in the beginning. You know, that they're not even going to give them any. That's the waves part. They're not going to get much love from the child. So, yeah, my work is all about trying to get men across the line to say the first year of fatherhood is actually really tough, and that your role is just to ride it out and be an ATM to go to work. And do your best, you know, just do your best to bond with baby, to be, you know, the best version of yourself, to be patient, to be loving, and just, you know, ride it out. Because after that first, once you understand how to keep the babies alive, and it's kind of like normal, you know, kind of, and there's a lot of myths around it as well, isn't there? These myths that women will automatically understand what it is their baby needs at every single moment. That's what men expect. So if there's any trouble with breastfeeding, or if there's any issues with the infant just not settling, guys can tend to be, yeah, really overwhelmed quite easily around this time.
So what happens in the male brain? And I want to say here, obviously we're being very gendered and talking about the nuclear family, so I just want to acknowledge that. But the majority of the people who listen to this podcast and have these conversations is there, but I want to acknowledge that. It would be really helpful if I could pick your brain on behalf of the thousands and thousands of women that I have spoken to who listen to this podcast as well. How does it feel? I hazard a guess. Sometimes we even talk about it in our coaching calls and in our training, how it must feel for the partner to witness his partner struggle with what we all assume is going to be easy, like breastfeeding, like motherhood. And she is sitting there thinking, why is this so hard? There must be something wrong with me. And she is in that overwhelming first few days and weeks and months of matrescence, of this massive, I was born a female, this should come easily, why is this not easy? All of those cultural assumptions we've been told about our bodies. What does it feel like for the partner to sit there? And, you know, obviously you can only share with me your own experience and the ones that you've heard, but I'd love to understand a little bit about what you guys think when you witness that and see us in those moments.
Well, I wish that people would recognize that modern parenting is a full-on team work. And so when you know, it is, it has to be.
Should
it
be.
Like, unless you've got, like, maids and stuff, I don't know. Yeah, and like, a lot of help from everyone around you in those early days. But it is a team event, you know, a team sport, so let's say. Mm. And we need to help guys understand that probably, and women too, obviously. Because if you're part of a team, then it's meant to be this kind of machine that works together. Yeah. So when guys are witnessing things, maybe breastfeeding isn't happening, you know, too too well, he might feel like providing some feedback. Hey, have you tried? Let's try this. Let's try that. And if there's any, you know, kind of relational dynamics that aren't really working, then there might be some frustration around that. And I think it's about trying to let people know that the best parents are the ones who just work exactly like a team and they talk like a team. One of the things my partner and I did from very early days was we used to, and we still do actually, use a traffic light system, mm-hmm. where we're like, okay, if you're really over it and you just don't want to be a parent at that time, we just say, look, I'm red at the moment. How are you feeling? And they'll say, oh, it's like, yeah, I'm green. Totally. Go away. Do whatever you want. And there we have that. But you can only do that if you've built up the other, the times when you've let the other parent go away and do their thing. I'm not sure if I answered your question. But
no, it's actually
it can
really
be frustrating
good.
For men. I think it's frustration, you know, and women will have the prolactin, you know, really like which is strong going for them. But men also experience changes in their hormonal landscape around this time as well that are similar to women. Like you made the call on the gender when you were asking the question. Well, parenting is actually human.
Yes, that's,
you know,
right.
Non-biological parents who are looking after a newborn have peaks in oxytocin and prolactin comes in and all the other hormones actually start taking place if you're looking after a little baby human. So
that's right.
Men are having those experiences.
Yeah. Yes. And I just think I can't imagine, you know, sitting in that space, I can't imagine how difficult that would be to sit and watch my partner trying to learn this new skill and feeling like she's failing, makes me emotional, feeling like she can't do it and not knowing how to fix it either, because you don't have boobs, you've never breastfed, nobody else around you is stepping in and helping. We talk a lot about the isolation of those early experiences of matrescence, and I can't imagine, well, I can imagine, which is why it's becoming emotional, how isolated it is to feel that of matrescence, to see both your own changes and the changes in your partner and the changes in your whole world, and you're not even sure how to navigate this because your dad, not that long ago, not many generations ago, dads weren't even there. They were like, I was watching a TV series on the weekend, Stephen, that was set in the 1950s, and the dads were all in the waiting room. We've all seen those shows. And they're handing around the whiskey and getting frustrated that they're going to miss the last round of the cricket because the baby's still not here. But that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, look, this is one of the things, whenever I'm talking to health professionals or like midwives or obstetricians, you know, doing a presentation or anything, I've got this slide where on the one side you've got traditional fatherhood or ancestral fatherhood, you know, mm-hmm. the provider, the protector, the disciplinarian potentially, and he's strong and stoic and he sits in the corner on a Friday afternoon and has a beer. That's generalization, of course. That's back in the day. But since the 1970s, and this is like the slide looks like a big, you know, it comes up to over here, and this is all the role of the modern father,
mm-hmm.
okay? Emotional development of the child, negotiation of behavior management rather than discipline, hopefully, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, in the best case, or well, in most cases, and all the other things, you know, birth support, pregnancy support, a taxi, you know, housework in the best case scenarios. But the preparation for fatherhood hasn't actually matched that. So what I say is that the role of the modern father has expanded, but the preparation for fatherhood has stayed pretty much the same. So we're not actually, and this is because men don't really communicate about the perinatal period, you know, conception to 1 year old. We haven't got the language, we haven't got the experience, we haven't got the historical context to start to actually have meaningful conversations about childbirth support, about what it's like to support pregnancy, regardless of, you know, if there's any complications, and what it's like to be a father in the first year. Men are not really starting, there's a little bit happening online. There's a little bit of, you know, in social media, there's guys are starting to reach out and say, oh, they've got a rash, what should I do? Or they're not settling, what should I do? And there's some really good outcomes happening around that. But when it comes to birth support, there is, you know, normally when we have an evolution of our species, let's say, and that's what this childbirth, men coming into the childbirth space signifies. It's an evolution of our species, and it's the biggest change in childbirth in the maybe ever.
Wow. You know,
epidural is big up there. Cesarean is up there as well. But bringing men into the room significantly changes the dynamics of childbirth. But men are yet to start talking about it. And maybe that would happen in the next 50 years without, you know, some kind of intervention. But that's exactly what my work is trying to do. I want to accelerate that so that we can men begin to start sharing wisdom about childbirth. That's when I think childbirth outcomes will be significantly improved, because more than 95% of births now have dads at the birth. And they don't have a clue about what childbirth is actually like. You know, they don't even know about the hormonal haze, you know, labor land. They're not really sure about, and they don't really know about support, because all we see is a list, 10-point lists on the internet, and the word support, but men don't actually know what that means in practice. And we need to start telling men what support signifies. And so being quiet sometimes is supportive.
Yeah.
Just sit in the corner and be quiet and just go, or be.
A witness, a space holder. Yeah.
It's okay.
Exactly. Just a witness.
Just looking after her a little bit. And but guys think support. So he's always going, do you need anything?
Yes.
What can I do to help? You know, and he's actually interfering with the whole process. And any birth worker worth their salt, if they're
trying, God,
if they're honest. will tell you, they'll say, oh, you know, men sometimes spoil a perfectly good birth by being too in her face, and that's what needs to change to make it safer.
I think I've shared this story before. During my first birth, it was very intense and traumatic and scary for both of us, for him and I, and there was a point where you talk about that hormonal haze where I was in between the contractions and I just couldn't hear anything. Like you could have told me the secret to life, and I was like, I just didn't hear anything. And at the time, my husband thought I had gone deaf, actually panicked.
Poor love.
No, but in the sense of, it was such a scary moment.
Yeah.
And he had no idea what was happening and was so scared for me about how badly this was going, that he turned to our midwife at the time and said, oh my God, is she okay? I think she can't hear. And when I reflect on that, like, that energy is not only, you know, obviously not what I needed in that moment, but I didn't hear anything anyway, but that's incredibly traumatic to watch the person that you love birthing your first baby and thinking, I think there's something seriously wrong here. She now can't even hear us. What's wrong? I totally agree with you. We've put them in the room but not prepared them. And that's not okay.
And I feel sorry
that's
for
not
guys.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
I feel sorry for the average
I
Joe,
think
you know.
The system doesn't work for any of us, Stephen. We've got it wrong for most of us. I think we need to redo the whole damn thing. But
well,
including
well,
the front.
And what? Yeah, sorry. One of the things I say is, if a guy, some guys shouldn't be there. They really just shouldn't. And we should create space in our birth culture with women, with men, to have an opt-out clause of just like, you know what, I think I'm going to faint. I don't know if I can handle it. Have a man saying to her, is it okay if I kind of just stay in the waiting room? Mm. And also having women having the courage to actually say, I don't really think you'd be I don't want you there, you know.
And that to be okay too. Thank you for saying
exactly.
That. I think that's important. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, I mean, the renowned birth worker Bria Dempsey calls men in the room the weakest link as well. You know, he'll be the first one if there's any mention of a cesarean, not always, obviously, but if there's any mention, it's like to release his own tension. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, can we go and, you know, have this intervention that and get the baby here quicker so that I don't have to suffer anymore, this mental anguish.
Mm.
You know, we say that the men's experience is insignificant, and that's not necessarily the case. It is the mental anguish of watching your partner in such distress can be it can change the dynamics of the whole birth. That's another thing that I do talk about as well, is that it's a risk having some men in the room, because they're actually, you know, they're bringing adrenaline into the room sometimes.
Or fear.
And fear. They're bringing their fear into the room. And if they can't calmly witness her surrender, then they really shouldn't be there.
Oh. How does that go down when you say that to a group of dads or dads?
Well, I think it's an essential message. I do. I think my job in all of this is, my self-appointed job in all this, is to actually try and make childbirth safer. So what I'm trying to do is to educate men about birth support, so that they're better able to support themselves and their family through this process. So, and one of those, to reduce risk. In a past life, I used to be in risk management. And I recognize that having men in there, uneducated men, like lay people, is a risk. Mm-hmm. And that if you can engage them and involve them and get them understanding what's going to happen and what they can do to help, which is quite a lot, actually, then it will reduce the risks of childbirth. And so this is a major risk. Having guys in there that are clueless and or that are squeamish or I've never had anyone really pull me up about it, but maybe that'll happen.
I think it's a really
important, I just think it's important to
message.
Say.
Yeah, I do too. And so then when you get home, what do we need to do better for dads in those first few weeks and months? In that first 12 months, what support systems should we have in place for dads, and what should we understand better?
Well, I think what we need, and this is part of the work that I do, I'm setting up what we're calling the Birthing Dads Brotherhood. So anyone who does our courses will have some shoulders to lean on in those first critical few months. So I would suggest support from other guys who are going through the same thing is a massive, change in our culture that I'm trying to facilitate. So and we need to get men understanding the first 6 months, you know, even although he's like, okay, my life isn't going to change that much, I've got one new relationship to manage. He's thinking, well, I've got one new relationship, I've got a baby coming along, I need to think about my relationship to the baby. He might be totally focused in on that. When in fact, actually, every single relationship in his life changes, just like for mothers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just the baby that he's got to renegotiate the relationship dynamics. It's his partner, because she's going to be, you know, have an identity shift. He's going to have an identity shift as well. His hormones are going to be running, oxytocin, prolactin. His testosterone goes down by up to 30% if he's a doting dad. It's actually directly correlatable to the amount of care for the newborn that dads undertake, can go up, down by up to 30%.
Wow.
There's parts of his brain that will change, you know, the empathy parts of his brain that allow him to predict the needs of the child, those kind of things. So, and postnatal depletion as well, we need to teach men a little bit about that. We need to kind of, I think, ask men before they're about to become dads, you know, what are you going to miss? What are you looking forward to? But what are you going to miss, and how are you going to make up for that? Because I think that's where mental health issues can come in, isolation can come in. You know, what are you going to miss, and how can you, you know, like he might be a golfer, okay, and he plays 18 holes on a Saturday. Well, he's not going to be able to play 18 holes in the first few months, but he's got to recognize that that's actually, you know, because he can't just disappear for 4 or 5 hours. He might be a surfer and go away for, you know, 3 or 4 hours as well. But no, he's going to have to cut that back on that. So we need to actually share with men the magnitude of the change that's coming their way, I think, in summary.
And do you think that we're getting there in terms of beginning to acknowledge what it is to be a father in our culture, in our workplaces, in our society? Do you feel like we're, I think COVID may have had something to do with that, Stephen. I think a lot of dads having to work from home and kids in the background on Zoom, I feel like it may have had a beneficial effect on acknowledging that we're actually family people at home as well as these executives at work. What's your feeling about where we're at right now?
Oh, look, the, you know, for the dad space, maybe from school age on, or even toddlers now, that has definitely improved in the last, say, 15 years. And there's so many organisations now supporting, you know, what I call the dad-olution. We're going through a dad-olution. It's a revolution of dad.
I love that.
but we're still missing out on the perinatal period. So there's still this kind of gap in the dad-olution, the evolution of fatherhood around the perinatal period. We're really not preparing men for the early days, which is the toughest. We're supporting them around, you know, the toddler years and elsewhere. But one of the things I say is fatherhood begins at conception. A lot of men say to me, yeah, but my role doesn't begin until the baby's in my arms, Steve. And I'm like, no. You connect with that bump right now. And that's the thing. I think that's what's missing. You know, men do have an emotional connection with the child, but we need to teach them that that's what they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. So when they're at work kind of dreaming, they're kind of going, I'll be, you know, in a month's time, I'll have a little baby in my arms. That's an emotional connection. We need to start yelling at guys saying, hey, you're a dad now, because there's this, you know, as we know, pregnancy is a highly energy expensive activity. It's actually the most energetically expensive thing known to man, woman. And men can actually assist during pregnancy, assist the growth and development of their children by helping their partner conserve energy. Because as we know, a baby gets everything from mother, and the more energy she has to expend on doing all the things around the house, or you know, anything that to keep the household going, takes her energy away from putting it into the baby. So I teach men that if they can help their partner conserve energy, that's actually energy going straight to the baby.
Yes.
And that's how they can become a father from conception onwards.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing, and thank you for having these conversations with fathers, dads-to-be. So we will share in the show notes how someone can get in contact and connect with your work, but just overall, what services do you offer? Just share with us what is there for dads, for partners. If anybody is listening and they pass this on to their partner, what is available?
Well, there's actually quite a lot. We've been doing a lot of we've been creating a lot of resources. So there's, if you go to prepare.org.au, there is some graphics and downloadable kind of flyers and a poster that explains what a man's role is in the perinatal period. We've got a video resource for culturally and linguistically diverse fathers. We've got flyers in 6 languages. We've got a 1-hour transition to fatherhood kind of, I guess it's kind of a course, and that's free. And that's hosted on the Fathering Project's website. And that I interviewed a first-time father, and I kind of, you know, asked him about what he knew and kind of talked to him about what he might want to know. And I also interviewed 15 of Australia's top experts in the perinatal space. And I said to them, what would you say to the first-time father? And I took all the highlights and I put it into this this thing is called Connected Dads resource. But then I also created a course a 4-hour course with all those experts and myself, and created a whole lot of content around, you know, the role of men during the perinatal period. And that's available on the Birthing Dads website. That's a paid resource. We also brought in Dadpad from the UK and turned it into an Australian version, which is a newborn healthcare, like newborn care manual. They say they don't come with a manual, but Dadpad really is it. No, seriously, and it's really good, actually. It's got it's all so set up for guys. It's all set up for guys, and, I mean, you can get that for Christmas, although that we probably won't publish
before
then.
Yeah, we'll be out in January, but
no,
the New Year's present.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful resource, and we've also licensed Towards Parenthood, which is from the Parent Infant Research Institute in Melbourne, and that's a resource for people to go through. It's an e-resource, and you type in some, and it promotes conversations between parents about what kind of parents they want to be, about, you know, future-proofing the relationship. And also we licensed Acupressure for Labour from Dr. Kate Levitt, a world-renowned expert in acupressure for labour, and there's 11 videos in that. And dads love the idea of having something to do, right, during labour. So there's all these great pressure points that can be used. So we licensed that as well, and that's what we call transition to fatherhood package. That's on demand. And early next year, we'll be doing some, I'm calling them the Birthing Dads Posse, where we have group sessions with guys, you know, like from all across Australia and the world, and run them through what to expect. And that's going to be conducted with a midwife as well, a clinical midwife.
Wow.
And the Birthing Dads Brotherhood, which is like an ongoing support network for guys, a WhatsApp group, a Facebook group as well, and, yeah, monthly catch-ups, you know, how you doing, what's happening, so that they can actually have people to relate to in that time, stop the isolation. But also one of the key things for me is helping guys understand the dynamics in their relationship that's going to change, so they don't blame the individual. They realize other guys are going through a similar thing, and that will, you know, because one of the things I find really sad is that, you know, people break up sometimes in that first year, and it's just their relationship, you know, it's relationships are like elastic bands. They come, sometimes you're really far apart, other times you're really close together, and people, you know, sometimes they have a breakdown in relationship and the baby's just young. And I always felt that that was a little sad. And they just got to push through the hard times, you know. And the Prepare Foundation is actually an acronym, which is, it's a mouthful. The Perinatal Relationship Education and Paternal Advocacy Research and Engagement Foundation. So Prepare.
Oh, wow.
And that's all the things that we want to do.
I love that.
Relationship education is a big one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you there, Stephen. I've been coaching mums for over a decade, and no matter how much I say we're here to talk about you and your experience of becoming a mother, within minutes, it's, but can I just talk to you about what's happening in my relationship?
Yeah.
If we could support, because that's the thing, you become a whole other person, a father or a mother, and that relationship does change and get less attention and less time and focus. And if we don't talk about that and acknowledge it and support them through that, that can be the biggest breaking point. So thank you for what you're doing. I hope we do more together, and I hope that everybody that's listening share this with their partner, with each other, and jump on all those resources you've just shared. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely to chat to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for being a part of this global matrescence community and following along with this podcast. Please make sure you hit subscribe on your podcast player and share this podcast far and wide. If you would like to work with one of our Mummarizing coaches to support you through your own matrescence experience, please look at our directory of amazing coaches, facilitators, workshop leaders, and space holders at mummarizing.net, and consider donating to our Global Matrescence Foundation
so all mamas everywhere can receive this support. And finally, if you would like to consider being a Mama Rising coach yourself and bring this work into your part of the world, please jump on our waitlist for our next intake for the Mama Rising Coaching Certification. Until next week, thank you again for being a part of this movement.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.